Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Garage Talk Live. I'm Vinny B. And today we have a very special guest, the one and only man who played Dale Earnhardt, Colonel Sanders. And he's now the one of the spokespeople for, what's that flooring thing? He'll get to that.
Novalis.
Novalis.
Yeah.
That's it, Novalis. One and only actor, host, man about town, and one of my good buddies, Jeff Sandor. Jeff, welcome back to Garage Talk Live.
Hi, how's everybody? Thanks for having me back, brother man.
Well, you know, different formats here. This is no editing involved, but so you're a busy guy after the show, and we'll get to that in a minute. This pandemic that we have going on, or the scrotum virus, because we have to wear a sack over our face.
You know, I was gonna ask you, Vinny. I couldn't remember if I could cuss on the show, but you just kind of cleared that up for me. So I think if we could say scrotum, I should be good.
Well, it's rated PG. I could, you know. Schedule it as an R.
Not anymore. you hit at least. We're starting out at least a PG-13 right here with.
you know, I didn't use the F bomb or the C bomb or the S word, but I let them go once in a while. I don't get anybody. If somebody wants to complain, let them. I don't care.
Me neither, brother.
I keep it clean when I have. Drivers and stuff on.
Nice. Yeah, I can understand that. I'm a comic actor, man, so for me anything kind of goes, and it usually does, so no worries.
But you know, it's one of those things, you know, your business, the show business aspect was, I guess, you know, totally shut down. If you weren't, you know, these people talk about being in fast food. At least they had work. Wasn't much. Were you able to collect the unemployment being shut down from showbiz?
Man, I got really lucky. And it's like good karma. For about the past 11 years, I worked with usually kids and young adults with disabilities. So I would take kids and younger people who had special needs, and I was involved in a program, and it was a paid program. I mean, but it was very minuscule money. I mean, it was nothing. It's a nonprofit organization, but I would work as a support associate, and I would take individuals with special needs out in the community. We would, you know, I take them to movies, I take them to the gym, to the park. They have individual goals that they would work on, and I would pretty much life coach and make sure that we were working towards those goals. So it was kind of a job, kind of a nonprofit kind of deal too. So when I wasn't filming, they were pretty good about giving me time to go off and shoot. And as long as they were, I'd always come back and try to work with these really special individuals. So I was doing that. So I was on the books for 2020 for doing that as a consistent thing. So once the COVID hit, I got unemployment from that, even though I was, you know, I was always bouncing between gigs and having time off. So I did get a little bit of unemployment from that for a short amount of time. I don't get it anymore because I did go back to work, fortunately. But also, they've cut the unemployment benefits. So, I mean, there was a big stopping point. And I understand why. But, yeah, I mean, the good Lord looked out for me. And I'd saved up some money from acting. So I've just been kind of kicking back and just trying to enjoy my time. And, I mean, me and you, we launched a podcast in the middle of all this, so it's been fun.
Yeah, speaking of podcasts, what prompted you to want to start doing a podcast? I mean, They Still Live. Some people you want to see
what
sick and die.
some more than others, sure. But you know what it was? It was you. You actually inspired me to do a podcast.
Me?
Funny enough. Just listening to your show, listening to Garage Talk Live, getting to be on the show and just chatting with you. And we've had a lot of off air conversations. And I just thought to myself, I said, man, there's got to be some like-minded individuals like us who are kind of in the middle of all the chaos and all the crap that's going on in the world right now. And there's not really a voice for those people. And I thought to myself, you know, wouldn't it be great to have a platform out there where reasonable people could weigh in on current real life events and we could talk about it. We could have real people talk about real issues and we just have real conversations. And we do that in a fun way. So long story short, I kind of just threw all that in a blender. And out They Still Live. Now the story, the backstory behind why it's They Still Live is actually, it's an homage and kind of a take on the John Carpenter movie, They Live. It was like a 1980s B movie that John Carpenter did starring Rowdy Roddy Piper. And the whole premise of it was the entire planet Earth was being inhabited and visited by aliens, by extraterrestrials. And they were using technology to mind control everybody. So when you looked at the aliens, they looked like you and me, like regular everyday people. And all the billboards and all the advertising, it was all subliminal messaging ran by the aliens. And there was a special pair of glasses that the resistance, the people that were in the know, that knew the aliens were here, they had these special glasses they would put on and they could see truth. They could see the real aliens. They could see the subliminal messages. And it was kind of an awakening. And that was kind of what I wanted to do with the podcast.
Pretty neat. I mean, you have a full panel of people, yourself, and then some of us can't make it from time to time. But what I like about it is You do record it, and it kind of makes it hard, like, I guess to take callers or something like that. But it's pre-recorded. You can edit out the bloopers. You ought to make a blooper show.
Yeah, we should have that. I'll have to release that one at some point.
That's for one of the day. You don't want to have a regular show. So, next week is our blooper reel, so I'm sure I contributed a good bit to that one.
You know, you actually are really great, but I do like, because I come from a world of film and television, like you come from a world of radio and talk show, and you're great live. You can do it live, you can do it pre-recorded, it doesn't matter to you, you're flexible. I come from a world of everything's pre-recorded. I'm in the TV and film world. I'm not a theatrical actor. So for me, it's almost like a safety net, and with having it pre-recorded, I can write and I can perform a lot of comedy sketches, and I can have them fairly polished, you know, because it's pre-recorded. We could do a couple of takes and put the best stuff out there for the audience. And there's a lot of times when you're doing a live show and a podcast, there's a lot of lulls, there's a lot of ums, and, you know, there's just a lot of content that's unnecessary. And having it pre-recorded gives us the opportunity and the ability to kind of just grab the good stuff and present that, so we're putting our best content and our best feet forward. And I like that. I don't know if maybe we'll do a – I think maybe we'll do a live show, you know, in the near future. I could see us doing that. I could see all of us on stage doing it and kind of having a riff tracks, kind of a podcast show in front of a live audience. I mean, anything is possible with what we're doing, but I'm just having a good time doing it how we're doing it right now. I hope you are. I mean, you are part of the cast. We do have a fixed cast of They Still Live actors. You're one of them. And I mean, you usually don't miss a show unless it's you got to go make money, which I understand that.
Yeah, and that's another good thing. Like even this show, I can schedule it for noon. I can schedule it for nighttime. I've done that before. And with that, you can do the same thing. And I might even jump to that platform. I don't know. I don't know how it works. I'd have to get some tutorial from you. But it's just weird that, you know, how did you find, we'll call them, is it a cast or is it a panel? You know, I think we're only more a panelist. Now, I did like that one bit of the dating game. That was pretty neat.
Jen is great, man. Isn't she Jen and Gully? If you guys haven't, check out Jen and Gully, casting director and actress. She is part of the cast of They Still Live on Spotify and Anchor. And she's an actor by trade too. So she's great doing different dialects and voices. And I'm hoping she'll be using those talents in later episodes and, you know, continue to explore her own cast of characters that she has in her head. And it's great to be a part of that. And, I like what we do. I like how we do it. I think of you guys as cast, but, you know, if you listen to the show, I always refer to people as the panel because, you know, we bring random people on from different walks of life. We had Adam Dias, who was a filmmaker and marketing, advertising entrepreneur. We had him on Sunday. We've had political science majors. We've had people from all walks of life. We had a power lifter wrestler on. I mean, it's great to have them. And I think of those as when they come on, they're the panel. And I just say that collectively across the board, but we do have what I call our core main cast. And that's me, that's you, Chase Shoemate, and Jen and Gully. And it works and people can kind of float, and I think some of the audience falls in love with some of us more than others, which is cool. I like having that kind of diversity.
That's true. I think I got to Jen the one time when I said I was considered myself a cunning linguist.
Man, we're really pushing that PG-13, aren't we?
Well, until we turn it up to 14.
That's it. That's
you know,
it. Going to PG-14.
We're talking about something that we do and where there is no holds barred. I mean, I could do a different show on this platform. Maybe I will evolve the name. I mean, wait, it's a garage talk. When you're in a garage, how do you talk? You know, it's not all women proper. It started out motorsports. That was my foot in the door, so to speak. And then off season, what do I talk about? Oh, it's going to be boring. I can't play reruns all the time or old shows. So I went looking around for other interests, either up-and-coming drivers, and I've had beauty queens on, you know, Miss America, Miss New Jersey, the actual Miss, was, they were based in New Jersey anyway. The actual president lived, like, maybe down the road from me in a different section of the development. And, you know, going to Dover, that was my my meeting ground. That's how I met Kristen, who, I mean, she's been a little aloof lately. Been hard to get a hold of her, but I was hoping she'd be able to come on.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because I think the last time I was on, she was co-hosting, I think. I don't know if I've been on since then, but I do remember her being on. And, yeah, I was going to ask about her. I hope she's doing good. I think she's just a very – she seems like a very busy lady. I try to keep up with her on social media as best I can. But, I don't know, man. It'd be great to get her back. She's fun to speak with. And, you know, speaking of, like, formats and platforms, when you were having beauty queens on, the only thing I could think was, like, man, I really wish this wasn't radio or internet. Like, this is when we need cameras to see the babes. Forget me and you. Look at these good looking ladies here. That's what it's like. Face. Oh, man, I really wish there was a visual.
Yeah, I have the face for radio.
You and me both, man. But well, you know, sometimes we get paid for being ugly. You know, I was one of those lucky guys. I get paid for being weird and get paid for being weird looking. I'm not a pretty boy. I'm just not. I'm rough and I'm rugged. And you put me in a flannel shirt.
Well, in this day and age,
yeah, I mean,
hello?
Just anything. As long as – can you hear me, Vinny?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, as long as the check's clear, dude, I don't care. You know, I'll wear a mask if they pay me to do it. I don't give a damn. You know what I mean?
I know there's an independent – she was in she's a Facebook friend of mine. She'd done the show. I haven't had her back on because one time I told her I was playing a rerun and she said she wasn't happy. But she's was in Halloween 5, the original Halloween 5, and she's a horror movie producer, you know, independent producer and actress. She's in Terrifier 2. I think Jen looked her up while we were talking on the podcast about her, then Tamara Glenn. And hey, you know,
okay.
For some reason, I have the ability to network. It's like I met Anne Marie. She was a Miss Sprint Cup, the first ever one, and then I met all the other Miss Sprint Cups. I've had them all on. They're technically beauty queens, sort of. Monica Colombo was a Miss North Carolina, USA.
Monica, let me tell you, man, she is gorgeous, number one. Number two, I've worked with her. We did a gig together, modeling gig, and she is one of the sweetest and just most intelligent people you will find. She is just incredible. It doesn't surprise me she was Miss North Carolina. It wouldn't surprise me she was Miss Universe. I mean, she's just an awesome lady.
And Brooke Werner Knaus, who's now married to Chad Knaus, she was a Miss Vermont USA. And, you know, the USA genre is run by guess who? Our president was.
Mr. Trump.
Mr. Trump, that was his venue. That was his the Miss part of all the Miss Universe. So,
well, everybody's got their thing, man.
And then there was one Paige Duke, who's now married with kids in Texas. Apparently, she had to step down due to a contract clause because one of her ex-boyfriends posted up some personal nude pictures of her, and that kind of got her. But she was nice, and they all were. That's a different group. And then you had the Monster Energy girls that, so darn many of them, they didn't seem like the Miss Sprint Cup seemed personal. They had a Sprint trailer and tried to get you to buy Sprint crap, and I was always talked up Sprint crap as a Verizon owner. So.
Sure.
And then,
that reminds me of something. Have you heard, speaking of Verizon and Sprint, and I don't know about Sprint, but did you hear that Verizon has an app that they have for, like, the corporate world that tracks, like, if their employees get more or get less than 6 feet apart from each other, if they get closer than 6 feet because of this COVID crap, it will send an alert to the manager of the department, and they're able to track who is coming in close proximity with each other. And they're using it basically as a disciplinary device. Have you heard about that?
No, I haven't. I wouldn't surprise me if Google has a tracking app that you can download to let you know when you come in contact with positive tested COVID patients. Now, how does a damn phone app know if somebody tested positive unless they put it on their phone that they tested positive? Does it read their body temperature and said this person's temp is 102? Watch out, they might be positive.
There must be some kind of method of consent, I would imagine, for people who are using that, because I can't, in my mind, imagine that the phone, one, I don't think the phone has the technological capability to do that, like as far as taking temperatures and whatnot. I don't think they can accurately do that. I'm sure down the road they probably will make them to be able to do silly shit like that. But, yeah, I think people are participating in that kind of stuff, man. I think they're consenting to it, which to me, I always look at HIPAA, and I'm like, is that a HIPAA violation or what is it? Because there's got to be some consent going on.
I guess you get one of them, you get a thermometer that plugs into the USB port on your phone that also works as a charger. And then you stuff the probe up your butt and it reads the temperature to your phone, and then it beeps out whether you're high or not.
And it also tells you if you're gay. So
yeah.
There's that.
It's like a moogah factor.
That's right. I say, oh, I like that. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Let me get a second one. I need a second opinion.
Hold on. This one's not fitting properly. I need an attachment.
We are vastly pushing the R rating now at this point. We're just totally hijacking Grunge Talk Live. I'm sorry. I apologize. I'll try to behave myself.
Nah. That's the fun thing about doing this. If somebody wants to complain, let them.
Isn't it cool to be your own boss? You are the manager.
I am the manager.
Eat that, Karen.
Sure. Yeah,
that's
Karen.
Right.
I'll eat Karen. She looks like a dish.
Man, I saw the greatest meme. It was a picture of Jeffrey Dahmer, and it says, "I eat guys like you for breakfast." That's bad. I gotta get that. I gotta put that on my a bumper sticker and put that on the truck. Goodness.
Oh, there you go.
So Vinny, have you ever thought about doing Garage Talk Live night or Garage Talk at night or, something to that effect where you kind of on the off season kind of roll over and do some more edgier stuff or just some kind of different stuff that may or may not be as closely race related as the usual show is?
Yes, I have. It would have to be, of course, on a weekend. I thought about calling it Vulgar Vinny's Neighborhood,
What? Uncle Vinny's Neighborhood? Is that what you said?
Vulgar Vinny's Neighborhood.
Oh, Vulgar Vinny. Vulgar Vinny's Neighborhood. I don't think Mr. Rogers is living on that block.
Yeah. That's true. And I start off with Ugly Kid Joe's Won't You Be My Neighbor is a theme song. That's pretty good. If you haven't heard it, check it out.
I need to. They just had their 28th anniversary of America's Least Wanted. And I had that. Mm. I had that album on cassette. I love that song. I Hate Everything About You. What a great tune that is, man. That brings back some memories and some people I actually hate everything about them.
Yeah,
that's it. That's another one.
Yeah, I decided to get it on CD because cassettes wear out.
Well, you probably had more resources than I did at that time. I was I was 12 years old when that album came out.
Oh, that's
crazy.
Right.
Crazy.
I'm a little older than you.
You had better financing at that point. That trips me out. I can't believe you're that much older than me because my oldest brother's 17 years older, so I guess to me, you're like a big brother.
Yeah, I'm old enough to be your daddy.
Yeah, you are. You sure are. And you got the experience behind you. But it's just so fascinating. And everybody, you know, when we're doing They Still Live, for the most part, the cast, for the most part, is relatively close in age. You're the eldest of the cast. And it's funny because I think that does give you a slight advantage on us some of the time, particularly with world history and stuff.
And that does give me, I am the oldest and I act the youngest, so it kind of throws people off. And nobody can guess my age anyway. If they look at me and they think I'm about your age or maybe a little bit over 50.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I would not put you over 50, looks-wise. Cool thing about you is, the thing I love is, whatever years experience you have on you, you are such a character. Like, you are your own character, particularly on the show, and it's just the most cool thing to listen to, and one of the most fascinating and entertaining parts of the show is what you bring to it just by being the oldest child on the cast. And I have so much fun with that because you and I, there's nobody that has been on that I can cut as many jokes with as I can with you. Like, you're just inherently funny. I try to keep up with that as an actor, and sometimes it's challenging to do that because you're always on it, man.
Well, I guess it depends on part of the personality. Believe it or not, I used to be an introvert. Quiet, shy.
No way. Bull.
Why won't these girls go out with me? Well, no, I think I'm a pretty good guy and all this kind of, I never asked them because I was always afraid of rejection. And when I finally said I was joining the military, nobody thought I would make it through boot camp, especially the Marine Corps. Well, guess what changed me?
Clearly. Let me ask you this, man, since you made that transition from being an introvert to being a military man, being a devil dog, okay, being one of the top of the food chain branches in the world, a Marine. You went from this introvert to that. How the heck did you transition that into hosting and doing talk? How did you do that? I mean, you have to be an extrovert to do that stuff.
This is true. I was such an introvert, I didn't talk, and now I can't shut up. And I guess all that yelling and screaming, the first half of Full Metal Jacket brings back memories.
Yes, it does.
That was the truest adaptation of Marine Corps boot camp that I've seen anywhere.
Man, I was Army Infantry, and I made my ex, at the time I was married when I went into the Army, but I was infantry. I did the same infantry shit as the Marines. Army does too. Same old crap. But I made, at the time, my wife, I made her watch Full Metal Jacket right before I went to boot camp. And man, she lost her damn mind. She was crying. I felt kind of bad. But I made her watch it.
Well, I had this advantage. I didn't have a wife. I didn't have a girlfriend. I just had my family at home. And back then, you know, you used to write letters when you're in boot camp.
Yeah.
And I had a few friends, so everybody wrote letters, and I wrote letters back. And for my little prior to rack time, we call it the rack, I don't know what y'all call it in the Army. More of our terminology was naval-based, being we were technically Department of the Navy. And
the Navy got you guys everywhere you needed to be. That was pretty much as far as that goes.
they were our chauffeurs.
That's right. And, water chauffeurs.
You know, if you're gonna spend time on a boat, I guess a naval ship is the type. I mean, you can shoot things and blow things out of the sky, all that kind of good stuff. I mean, aircraft carriers. Look at the size of them things. I mean, whoever thought something like that can hold all those planes and all those people? That's like that could be a state in its own right, let alone just a vessel.
Man, physics and the engineering behind the designs of these these warships is amazing. It is just amazing. These are some brilliant people that can sit down and design these things and they can float. They can be huge and they can float. It's incredible. So how did you go from your voyages in the military to being a damn like talk show and radio guy? I mean, and I mean, I've seen pictures of you out there interviewing these babes at the racetrack. How did you get into that?
Okay, long story short. Well, now we got a half hour. At the time, you know, between the time I got out of the military and the time I started this, which was, it was a local AM station in my home area, WNJC. It was a 1360 AM, and they sold airtime. Somebody suggested do that, and, you know, people pay money for airtime. Well, a friend of mine and a buddy decided to do a sports talk show, and they wanted somebody, and I had been watching NASCAR and racing, thanks to my wife, and before that it used to be hockey, so they needed somebody to cover the weekend Flyers games and auto racing, so I would get a press credential from the track at Dover every twice a year, and then of course season credentials for the Philadelphia Flyers, where I met some fine young broadcasters, and I started doing that. Then I'd come in on the weekend or a Friday night and the Monday night show, because if I was doing the weekend and we had the show was on a Monday night and a Friday, he'd cover the weekend. So he was into sales. As a matter of fact, he works for Raymore and Flanagan in Delaware, and I kind of missed when he left that, but that's how I got into it. And I'd give a little report on the game and interview, go into the locker room and ask players questions. And
What in your mind changed, man? Like, what did, when you got out of the military and you're doing your thing, I mean, and you got this potential job that your friend's trying to, you know, sell you on, what in your mind when you looked at that and said, I mean, at what point do you look at that and go, yeah, I can do that? As an introvert, I mean, how did you go, yeah, that's for me. Well, I can go into these locker rooms and do this stuff.
Well, I wasn't an introvert after, you know, boot camp and all that. I got out of the Marine Corps in 1980. So there was a 20-year gap before this all came about. He started it in 1990.
Oh, so you started in like 2000 or the late 90s?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was developing my personality. My personality has been evolving over the course of time, and the only way to get things done would be to approach people and ask them things or to find out. You can't get any information if you don't ask any questions. So when that all came about, then I started going to games, and then I watched other reporters and see what they did, and then I'd look for something different because everybody wanted their take on the same question. And then I'd ask something different. And then there was one Flyers game while I was still doing the auto racing, but one of the players got, popped in the nose, and it was all red and stuff. And he was married to the general manager's daughter. And we're in the locker room. I said, so you're going to play Rudolph this Christmas because your nose is all red? And everybody's like, like they're expecting him. So he rolled with it, man. He just rolled with it. He says, yeah, I guess I could, can I, man? That's not a bad idea.
You know, it's funny, man. I think one of the things I've figured out at some point in my many, many mistakes in my life and in my careers, I think I'm on my third career, and that's entertaining. But the most powerful thing that you can be is yourself. And I found that it's good to steal from the best. That's what my acting coach would always tell me. He goes, you know, when you're trying to do a scene, you know, steal from the best. Look at the best actors. What would they do, or what did they do? And take a little bit from them. But honestly, I figured out for me, the most powerful thing you can be is just you. Just be yourself and be genuine. And what works for you might not work for somebody else, but when you get up there and you're doing your thing, the authenticity of it oftentimes wins you a lot of fans. You know, that what do you think? Do you think, have you been more successful trying to be something you're not, or have you found more success just being Vinny, just giving them you?
Yeah, I found that being myself is probably better off. Because then people, after a while, I think if you're not being yourself, people see through you as a phony. And obviously from what I post and how I am, I'm there's nothing phony there. It's just me. But the only thing I take from other people are these memes. I mean, I've made a few up myself. And I get the same reaction anyway. So, and of course, it's on the naughty side. But there was one press conference at Dover, and Dale Jr., after, you know, he was driving for Hendrick, and they were changing crew chiefs. So he had, you know, they got rid of his one crew chief and brought in a new crew chief. And Jeff Gordon was still driving at the time, and I actually had was waiting in the men's room, and he come in there, and I knew he had to go do the press conference, so I said, "Yeah, you go ahead, you go ahead first, and you got to be there at a certain time." So he went first, and then I went, and then everybody's asking poor Jeff the same damn question about Dale Jr.'s crew chief change. Like, you can see he's getting annoyed on his face. And I wasn't in there soon enough, because usually I could be get the first or second question in, because then you could set the tone of how things go. I've learned that.
But with the individual you're interviewing, is that what you mean, the tone with them, how they're acting?
No, the tone with the rest of the press room, because they kind of follow. Well, I mean, they have their own stuff, but when you set it on a different course, then they try to follow that course, and of course, then they'll get their one soundbite question in. So I get in there, I raise my hand, I bring the mic, and then, you know, you wait your turn, because they actually had wireless mics. At one time, they didn't have all that. I'd stand up there by the stage or where they thing and just hold a microphone in their face. But, you know, they finally modernized a bit and then started passing around a wireless mic.
Fancy.
So if there are all these questions about Dale Jr.'s crew chief change, I raised my hand and it's like, okay, Vinny is. It's your turn. And I say, okay, Vince Bonfig League, Grodz Talk Live, WNJC. I'd like to change the subject. And he goes, thank you. So.
That's awesome.
And then all the other media guys. And then I asked, the track had done some changes to the, you know, different, they readjusted pit road and all this kind of stuff. So I took the question there. And then all the other, some of the media guys, a major radio station out of Maryland, and that one, he's the GM, and he goes, man, Jeff Gordon, thank you. I says, well, you know, he was getting tired of answering the same question 15 different ways, because basically everybody asked their question. And, you know, I could see that. I guess I have an ability to ad lib, so therefore I can shift gears and go a different direction.
You have to. You have to do that, particularly if you're doing something like you're Johnny on the spot. I mean, you have to be able to feel the room. You have to be able to improvise, adapt, overcome, and just do jive, move, and call an audible when you need to. I mean, that's a necessity, I think, in journalism and, well, hell, man, even in entertaining. I really want to meet Dale Earnhardt Jr., because after that NASCAR show I did, that was such a debacle. I don't know if I even told you. I don't even know if I've talked about it on the show or not, but Dale Jr. saw the rough cut of the NASCAR show I did where I played Earnhardt Sr. And the final cut, they cut all my damn dialogue out of the whole show. And I was in like 90% of the script. I'm in a scene with somebody, and either Dale Jr. or, you know, Senior's wife and growing up and all this stuff in the early days of his NASCAR career. They cut all of that out. And I had gotten a phone call from the producer of the show the day after the show had aired. And he said that Dale Earnhardt Jr., part of the deal was he got an executive producer credit for the show for coming on one day, for just one day, and just screening the rough cut of all three episodes because it was a miniseries.
Right.
And he liked the first two until he got to the third one, which was my episode where I played his dad. And he said he hated the writing and it was just so terrible and just it just was untrue. So they ended up having to recut the entire freaking episode, which was like a full length movie in and of itself because of the miniseries. It was damn 75, 80 minutes. I don't know, however long it was. But they ended up having to just you watch the episode. It's just me for 80% of the episode, me either walking in slow motion or driving really fast. And that was the portrayal that Dale Earnhardt Sr. got in that show. And that pisses me off to this day. So I always wanted to meet Dale Earnhardt Jr. And I want to confront that guy. And I want to ask him, I'm going to apologize up front and say, hey, if you didn't like my performance or you didn't like the way it was written, I apologize. I didn't have anything to do with the writing, but I played it as a character. I tried to do the best I could with it. I've got the, if you look at my demo reel, they sent me some of the cutout footages, some of the scenes I was in, and I watched it and I used it on my demo. It looked great. And I thought the whole story really painted Earnhardt Jr. and Sr. both in pretty good lights. I don't think the show, portrayed any of the drivers poorly. I thought it was good, but that always bothered me about him. I always wanted to talk to him about that.
Yeah, I know he does a podcast, and let me see what I can do.
Yeah,
I know the guy.
If you know that guy, if you know him or one of his people, I'd love to talk to him about that. Hell, I'd have him on our podcast. I don't give a damn. He could come on. We'll chat about
Hello?
It. Hello?
Hello?
Billy, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me now? Okay. It's like I just walked into a Verizon commercial. No, what I was saying, man, if you know him or his people, he can come on the show. We'll have him on the show. We'll have him on our podcast. I don't care.
Well, he does his own, him and his sister, Kelly. I know he used to produce his podcast. He's a PRN reporter, a friend of mine. And I'll give him a shout out and see if he's still doing it and if there's any way that he would come on to either They Still Live or have the guy who played his dad.
Yeah. I'll go on in. I don't care.
It's called the Dirty Mo Podcast.
I got to check that out. I haven't listened to him. I saw him on I saw Earnhardt Jr. do the JRE. He did the Joe Rogan Experience podcast, and he was good.
But, it's like I made friends in that industry, some of like him and not Dale Jr. I interviewed him once, one-on-one, before he got to the Cup Series.
How was he? Was he pretty personable to you?
It seemed like it. At first, I didn't even recognize him. He came in kind of like, how kids, the younger people were trying to look hip-hop and baggy head, the pants and the head, the hat pulled down and all that. I didn't even know he walked past me until he came out when his PR rep. That's another thing, you got to go through the PR reps and all that kind of stuff. And that's another thing about, getting drivers, especially high-caliber ones, it's a little hard. So I usually go for the lower-tier different series and get all them. And then if I'm at the track, I can get the Cup guys. They only like to do, the major broadcasting network stuff. Unless they're caught in a press conference with a bunch of reporters and broadcasters like myself. But, yeah, I had a one-on-one interview with him. And this was before he got even bigger and more famous. He was up and coming, and I had to come up with questions. I actually, me, my wife, and all, we wrote questions to ask him, and I followed my list of questions. And after that, I never wrote a question for an interview again.
What? Okay, why did you? Why is that? Was that? Did something happen because you did that, or did you just go, that didn't feel right, or do you feel like you don't need to do that anymore?
Well, yeah, it felt right for the time, but then I figured out that I didn't need to do that because I can take a question, play off the answer to that for another question, play off the answer to that for another question, and then have a conversation type of thing, kind of like we're doing now. And that's what I think a lot of people told me they liked about the show, because it's not a Q&A type of thing. It's more of a conversation. So, you know, you take positive feedback and go with that. So that's kind of my MO now. When they say, can you send me a list of questions? I say, I don't pre-write questions to the PR reps.
Yeah, I mean, I understand both sides of that. I understand that there are just certain people, and there are certain people that have people whose job it is to protect the image of their person. So they want to always have the edge, and they always want to have a heads up, and they don't want to get blindsided with anything. And then there's people like me, man, who I'll just roll with it. I don't care. I mean, I just really just don't care. Like, I look at what Hollywood, how it projects itself, and the 1% seems to be this loud, just obnoxious lunatic language and belief system. And I know I'm not that. I'm just not that. So I don't really get too worried about being that prepared for questions. It's like, man, if I'm on camera, I'm on, of course. Usually I'm playing a scripted character or a commercial or whatever it is that I'm doing. But at the same time, when I'm off of that setting, there's, you know, you're going to get me for the most part. I mean, you and I are on, but you're still getting us for the most part. I might be a little bit more animated and exaggerated for a radio show or for a podcast than I would be if we were sitting at a table together, but you're still just getting the regular dude. I think people like that, man. I think people – that resonates with people. I know I look at actors, I'm like, oh, okay, he does silly stuff like this, so do I. And now it's just like the people are – they're more human. They're more – I don't know, man. They're more – you can touch them, you know. They're in reach, if that makes any sense. I like that.
Yeah, but see, that's just it. I think you're – I guess what you would call the upper echelon – A-lister type has the PR person that wants to know what's coming, because they don't want to be blindsided, and maybe they're more phony than they want people to believe. And, you know, I give them a link to the show. I said, check it out. Here's, you know, episodes that I've had with people that, you know, see how interviews go, and then they check it out, I guess, and book the interview, and away you go. It's like, and then, you know, you get your first-time guest, your initial guest, and you introduce them, you know, welcome to the debut, and then you bring some of their background in and all that kind of stuff, because maybe my audience doesn't know that. I mean, audience
exactly.
Does. But maybe my audience doesn't, so that might throw some people off. Maybe like the show with Jen. Like, I didn't know her before the podcast, and I was kind of intrigued by her background and what she did and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I approached her about, and I didn't write any questions. And I'm sure you've heard the episode, and hopefully she had a good time.
Yeah, I did. She really enjoyed it. I talked to her after. She's like, "Did you hear my episode?" I was like, "I did hear your episode."
Now you're breaking up.
Jen was asking me. She goes, "She's like, did you hear my episode?" I was like, "I did. I heard it." I said, "It was great. You guys sounded good." I said, "Did you have a good time?" She's like, "Oh, I really enjoyed it." And she's like, "Vinny, he's such a fun guy to talk to." But you know what I found that's funny, Vinny, is from us doing the podcast and having Jen, you know, doing it with us. It takes skill to do that, man. Like, it takes skill to have a conversation with cameras and microphones. I don't know what it is, but it's a hell of a lot harder than I think people who don't do it know. Are you on a mountaintop?
You built up a little. What's that?
Are you on a mountaintop? Are you on a mountaintop again?
Yeah, that's where I live.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Man, sorry about that. I'll supercharge my phone here with a good signal. But what I was saying, though, is it takes skill to do what you and I do. And I didn't appreciate that or really recognize it until having to do it. And I'm like, damn, this is hard. And I look at and listen to other podcasts, and I'm trying to get better, you know, as a commentator myself. And you're fortunate because you've got literally decades of experience doing just that. And what you do translates really well to podcasting.
Well, when I started this particular show, I had a co-host, and I've always had it up until I started doing the daytimes. And that's probably one of the toughest things. That's why if I have a guest on, I could talk to somebody. If not, I'm just playing stats and audio from races and stuff like that. But it's on how you present that as well. So I think some of those shows might tend to go by the wayside, and people are more interested than when you have a guest on. This way you can go back and forth with someone. Now, believe it or not, when I go for interviews for promotion for things at my day job, and you know, I tell them I think I'm pretty good with people. I have good people skills, because you have to when you talk to race car drivers, actors. I even had a porn star on my show, Gina Lynn. She's probably
again. You
now,
should have been. You should have had camera work on that, man. I'm just saying, we should have had a visual with some of these guests.
Yeah, but the. I was at the studio, and they were at their house, and it's kind of, and this, she was doing an appearance at one of the gentlemen's clubs called the Penthouse Club, and they gave her a hard time and harassed her. So I said, well, you know, I knew a guy that had dealings with her, and he sent her to me, and I had her on, and voila, we had a nice conversation. Of course, one of the other sports talk show guys came in, and so he joined us, and away we went. So it's.
I think that had to have been a fascinating conversation to have with somebody who's in that line of work. I mean, I don't have anything either pro or against that industry. It's a job. It's what people are into. Cool, man. I get it. No problem. But just I'm so far removed from that side of the entertainment industry. That would have to be an interesting conversation to have with somebody and to hear their stories. You know, specifically their you know, personal stories and how what the backstage, you know, what it's like behind the scenes of all that stuff. That had to have been fascinating for you.
Well, I didn't really get into that because it was more about her mishap with that club and what they wanted her to do and what she signed on to do. And, you know, back then, you know, even then it's like, you're only allowed a certain amount of time, 15, 20 minutes with a guest. So
that had to have been a cool conversation and a story. Even her just talking about getting hassled at the strip club. I would have listened to that just because I just think that's just so far out, man. It's just weird and just random. I'm like, yeah, let me hear the backstory of this.
You want to get this is somebody I'd like to get on the show, and maybe she might come on. They Still Live is Jenna Jameson.
Probably that lady, she's a badass.
And she's believe it or not, she's Jewish and a conservative.
Yeah. Well, she's changed a lot over the years, man. Like I'm very aware. Anybody and everybody, I think, knows Jenna. And, you know, she's, like anybody else, she grows, she's grown, she's changed, you know what I mean? And I think she has, you talk about somebody who went kind of from rags to riches and was a smart business person as well as an adult entertainer. It's her, man. I mean, she became her own brand and built an empire. I don't know if she'd do our show. Well, my show or you know, the They Still Live show, but she might do your show before she does anything with me.
I don't know.
But she's awesome. She's awesome.
You might carry more clout being an actor. You're in showbiz. You have that. Of course, her show biz was a little different, and hers is more show jizz instead of show biz, but I don't know.
There we go. We've hit the R rating for Garage Talk Live on Tuesday. I'm glad to be a part of that. I knew we weren't going to make it, Benny. I knew it. I was like, we're not going to keep PG for sure. That's going out the window. And then PG-13, we're going to the R rating, mature audience.
R minus.
That's right.
But
listener discretion advised.
I mean, I can go to work, and then somebody will say something, and then my supervisor will look at me and say, "Don't say it, Vinny. Don't say it," because they know what I'm thinking, and they know I can turn it.
Do you have people at where you work? Do they listen to the show? To Garage Talk Live?
Some do, and I think they're busy doing their own thing this time of day. And I think they might pick it up on the podcast part of it after I hang up the phone from the studio, and probably easiest for them to catch it. But everybody's got their own lives. Maybe I could market it better if I had the time to do it. But see, that's the one. I think that might be my one weakness is marketing. I don't have the time.
Man, I think that's everybody's weakness. That's everybody's weakness. That's every actor, every model, that's everybody's weakness, except for these little bitches on TikTok. These little bitch model dudes that are so pretty. Those guys can market themselves shamelessly. Instagram and TikTok, man, that's where it's at. That's where these people are doing some heavy-duty marketing. But I'm like you, and I'm 40. And I ain't pretty, but I suck at marketing. I suck at that. That's my, and it's with our podcast too. You know, it's like I'm still researching and trying to figure out different ways to promote it and get it out there. And every time I do a commercial or a show, I'm trying to, you know, kind of carry some of that clout over to the podcast and, you know, just kind of hope it snowballs from there. But it's tough, man. Marketing's a tough deal.
That's the thing too. It's time. It takes time to find these resources or get a sponsor, which helps in the marketing because then you promote them, they promote you, they have you out to do maybe a live thing, and then you have to top it all in, make sure you have a good internet so you can go back to the home site, Anchor FM or Blog Talk Radio, and that has a lot to do with any of this stuff. And that's where I guess a marketer comes in handy because that's what they do. But do they work on commission? Do you have to pay them up front? You know, that kind of resource I don't have.
Yeah, that's something that that'll happen when the time is right. I mean, that's like getting a publicist or anything else. When the time is right, that's when you get one. Don't worry about it till then. And you will know beyond a shadow of a doubt when it's that time. And I think with marketing, it's like, it's so funny, like getting sponsors and stuff. And I'm sure you're well versed in this too. I'm sorry. It's that mountaintop. I don't know what it is, but it's like credit, man. It's like nobody wants to give you credit until you have credit. And it's like with getting a sponsor, it's like, well, we can't sponsor you till you have an audience. It's like, well, I can't have an audience, you know, because I got to get it out there. So it's just this weird cycle of being kind of trapped. And it's like, man, sometimes people can crawl out of that faster than other people, but there's a lot of variables in it, man.
Well, now, Adam, our guest on – I think we should have went politics full bore from the beginning with him because I wanted to drag out of him why he was so progressive.
Yeah, I was going to say, Vinny, for everybody that's listening now, because our episode with him on it, it's not going to air for two more days in real time because it's pre-recorded. Tell Adam, explain to your audience who Adam was and some of the conversation we had that they could listen to in a couple days.
Adam Dias is the man's name, and he's a progressive. I guess he's in the film industry. We're almost out of time here. And we decided to, I guess we decided to have him on to see what he thought and have a discussion with him. And everybody was asking questions about this, what he thought. And then I just started asking questions about why Bernie, why progressive? I mean, what is it about that entails you? And then he started saying stuff, and then Chase came in and said, "You sound like a conservative."
Yeah, right? He did.
Yeah. So I was drawing his mindset out of him, and I might have been able to change him if we had more time.
Man, those people who, if they can look at you and go, "I hate this man more than I love my country." When you have those kind of folks, you're not going to change their mind. Don't even waste your time. You know, it's just, that's why I like having those folks on, because I like hearing just different perspectives, because it helps me grow and learn. But, you know, I just try to give everybody space to have their own viewpoint and just try to make the best decisions for my life that I can, you know.
Yeah, see, like I said, and then being in the military, through the Carter administration, which enabled Iran and all this other garbage going on that side of the world, that having a guy as gruff as Trump who doesn't sweet-talk everybody like that, yeah, it's good to have. We need somebody to put the fear of God in these countries that are taking advantage of us. And I know they were saying, "Oh, he's going to start World War III." Well, he hasn't, and they back down. That's all those people know. If you let them get away with stuff, they're going to get away with it. If you slap them upside the head, whether it's taking out one of their terrorist generals or whatever, and it sends them packing. The reason why they have been quiet since the Crusades is because they got their ass beat then.
Well, it's like this, Vinny. It's, you know, usually it's talk soft but carry a big stick. Well, we just happen to have a president that has a big mouth and carries a big stick. But guess what? The results are about the same. They don't want to try us. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah. Better to put them in the place early, so if they do try something, then you bitch slap them down, and they know he means business. Again, trade deals. Who'd have thought China would be buying rice from us? Yeah, it's only part of a trade deal, but hey.
Man, how is that not the coolest thing? I almost brought that same example up. I almost brought that same example up about China. I'm like, how cool is it? Our president negotiated a deal to where we sell rice to China. That's freaking brilliant. I don't care if you like him or not. It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a politician for almost 4 years. And he's gotten the job market, the stock market, everything's booming, low unemployment. A lot of these politicians up until then talked a good game. All of a sudden he delivered. And he only had both houses of Congress for 2 years.
Yeah, that's right.
Half of them didn't like him. So.
Well, you know, if it comes down to, you know, Trump and Biden, or should I say Trump and Harris, basically, you know, I'm sorry. I would vote for you. I would vote for freaking anybody. I'd vote for damn Whoopi Goldberg. I don't care. Anybody but Biden and Harris. I'm sorry. It's just, yeah, I got to go with Trump, man. You got to.
Well, I'm centrist, but I always vote to the R side, because freedom and liberty is better than socialism and tyranny. And that's what it's become. I mean, you're starting to get minority candidates running on the platform for Republicans. I mean, look at this chick in Baltimore, Kimberly Clasick.
Yeah, she's awesome. Very intelligent. Yeah. Very intelligent lady. Mm-hmm.
And there's one on Sirius.
And these are great things.
Sonny Johnson. I mean, she has a. She's from, I guess, Richmond originally, but she's trying to enlighten the inner city people that conservatism is better than liberalism, and it might be working. We'll see in November. Hello, my friend.
Well, I think we're out of time, aren't we, man?
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, Vinny.
Tune in to the podcast, They Still Live. When it's posted, the new one will be up in a couple days. I meant to share the other one, but I don't know. Trying to do it on the phone is tough, so.
Just search out They Still Live on Spotify and Anchor. You'll find us, and you can hear more from me and the iconic Vinny B.
And Chase Shoemate, Jenny Gooley, and our other panelists, guests who come on, Linda Fenton, and anybody we intend to. Linda was going to go off on Adam, I think. If she didn't have to leave, she probably would.
Don't worry. We'll have a round two with those two for sure.
Yeah. All right, my friend. Thanks again for coming on. And catch They Still Live. I always post it on my Facebook page if I can get the link. So.
I appreciate you sharing that, man. Yeah, we'll do a set change, and I'll talk to you soon.
All righty. Have a good one.
Adios, amigo.
All right. Bye now. There you have it. Jeff Sandor, host of the podcast They Still Live, here on Garage Talk Live. Eric Andrews won the U.S. Nationals. Jack Beckman and Sean Langdon in the top fuel. Kevin Harvick wins round one in the playoffs and moves on. So we'll have more racing this coming week up in Richmond and the night race Saturday night. I'm Vinny. That's your host. Everybody have a good day. See you next week. Bye now.